Another work week at the Woody is in the bank for Ohio State. That payback is a best Friday in football for the Austin and Berm show. That means Freaky Friday and bold predictions on the beat. And for everybody, that means a trip to the Horseshoe on Saturday night. Can't wait to be there for UCLA at Ohio State, 7:30 p.m. on NBC. It's been a busy week, Berm.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny, you know, it's one of the things I really want. Ryan Day has talked about a number of times just about how different college football is. But like, I don't know that we've ever really picked his brain and said, how much of an adjustment is it for you as a coach, as a coaching staff, to know that we're now in the second weekend of November, third weekend of November, and you could potentially have seven games left after this? Like, how crazy is that for you to understand? And how much has that really shifted the way coaches around the country coach? And we know Ohio State has adapted better than most when we look at the pace of play and all of the stuff that Ryan Day has done with load management and, you know, making sure guys get proper rest and all that stuff. But I don't know that a lot of other schools are adapting at that level. And I wonder why Ohio State was so far ahead of it. But it's November the 13th as we record this on Thursday afternoon. And like, we have 2+ months of football left, hopefully. And it feels like every week's getting longer and more arduous, but it's all building up to something pretty special in Columbus. So good for us.
I mean, it's a good question, and I think it would be a lengthy, extensive answer. But one facet of it is that Ohio State is positioned in a way that 95% of the college football programs in the country, they cannot load manage. They're trying to qualify for the playoff. They can't take any games off. Ohio State has a built-in margin for error that it is currently. Maybe it'll stay that way forever under Ryan Day, and with private equity coming into the league, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of other pathways that could go down, but you know, the job is unique for Ryan Day to manage this, because it is not like anyone else in the Big Ten really is afforded that same luxury that Ryan Day and the Buckeyes are, which is that they might be able to play a bunch of different players on Saturday night against the Bruins. Right, it's fluctuating as we sit here right now between 31.5 and 32.5. The Buckeyes are favored by against UCLA. Berm, a total 47.5. So as we do every week on Bold Predictions, we start with our updated score predictions and a total. This is not qualified gambling advice. It's just where we would put our own money.
Yeah. What did I say on Monday at the live?
I don't know. That's why it's an updated number.
I said like 56 to 13. I have believed that this is a game where Ohio State, I think UCLA, despite the fact that they are pretty reliant on Nico extending drives and stuff with his legs, I think that they're a team that is going to go either 3 and out or score quick in this game if they have an opportunity. And I don't anticipate they'll get many opportunities to score, but Nico does provide some unique challenges. Talking to people at the Woody Hayes on Wednesday night, the term I was told about him was that he was a bleeping problem. And you know, we've seen Ohio State pay deference to different players throughout the year and give different respect to guys for what they do. I think Nico Ia Amilava is going to give them an opportunity to have some fun on Saturday night. I don't know. You know, UCLA likes to turn the ball over. They get sacked a lot. They do a lot of things that are very counterproductive for an offense. But I think as long as the weather holds up, and right now we're saying like PM potential for rainstorms late in the evening, 10 to 20 mile an hour wind gusts. If that happens, it changes things. But I think Ohio State's going to cover the 31.5. So let's just let's knock that 56 to 13 down to 45 to 10, Ohio State.
This number is huge. It scares me a little bit, if I'm being honest, and not because I think Ohio State is in any danger of losing this game, because they're not. But I think back just 6 days ago to Ross-Ade Stadium in Purdue and the way Ohio State managed that, which was like, you know, a big brother holding a little brother at arm's length and be like, hey, you can keep swinging your arms. It's cute. It's adorable, but you're never going to hit me. And they can put a bunch of different guys out there. They can tinker with the personnel. I called it a scrimmage. It certainly felt like one where the scoreboard didn't matter, and which was also why Purdue turned it off as soon as that game was over. That's just, I mean, over 4 touchdowns to cover for a team that is not disinterested in losing, but certainly doesn't not disinterested in winning, not bored by it, but doesn't care all that much about style points, doesn't care at all about it or running up the score. It makes me a little bit hesitant to think that Ohio State and Ryan Day are dramatically going to shift their own tempo or what they have emphasized throughout the course of this year now that the finish line is actually creeping into sight. And by that, I don't necessarily mean, as you said, 7 games from now, a national championship, but going to the Big House in 2 weeks and then potentially playing for a Big Ten championship after that. So I don't know that they'll abandon that. I know that it's distinctly possible that they could ramp it up and increase the urgency heading into this stretch, but I don't know that that will actually happen against UCLA. So I am now at 38-7, Berm, and maybe the Buckeyes have a tendency to prove me wrong a lot. And I'd be fine if they did, and they'd make this a game where I can post first thoughts on Letterman Row by the end of halftime, but I don't know that that's going to happen.
So that's a not a cover and an under for you. Here's the thing that I think might be a little bit different. Ohio State is intimately aware of the fact that these opportunities for a night game in November at Ohio Stadium are rare. I think that provides a little bit of juice. I think that adds a little bit of juice to the crowd, which gets the players a little more amped up and pumped up. I think that they're going to come out swinging and try to knock UCLA out early. If you look at the best teams UCLA has played this year, Utah beat them 43-10. Penn State scored 42 points on them, despite the fact that, 37 in the loss. Indiana beat them 56-6. Nebraska put up 28 points on them last week with a backup quarterback. Even UNLV scored 30. New Mexico scored 35. If Ohio State just doesn't turn the ball over, I think that they trip and fall to 45 points in this game. I don't think that there's a world where Ohio State doesn't score the over under by themselves in this game. If they don't give the ball back, if they don't stumble on their own feet. So I just don't think UCLA has the ability to stop them defensively at all. So if the weather is a mitigating factor, we'll see. But there's nothing that UCLA does defensively that can limit what Ohio State can do offensively, and that's the case with or without Carnell too.
Yeah, I just feel like Ohio State will continue to limit itself with the pace of play. We'll see. There's only one way to find out, which will be Saturday night. And there are certainly factors that lend to your argument that this will be an easy cover, potentially an over for Ohio State by itself, which is that UCLA is 17th in the Big Ten in scoring offense and 17th in the Big Ten in scoring defense. That is pretty bad. So I did say, Berm, and I forgot to mention this to you earlier in the week, that we were going to double back and take one mailbag question before we got into our bold predictions on Friday. And this one came from Steve. He's out in Napa, California, big Buckeyes fan, and he wanted to know if we think the coaching staff at this point of the year, we've talked so much about the offensive line, if they would consider moving Carson Hensman to right guard and starting Josh Padilla at center, or is Carson Hensman a candidate for the Remington and they don't want to mess with that? Or again, maybe it's too late to voluntarily move Padilla to such an important position. There's another factor to that, which is Josh Padilla's health. But I also think that the answer to me is no, because there was a head-to-head competition at center throughout training camp and last year, and Carson Hensman proved that he was the best guy for Ohio State in the middle of the offensive line. He's gotten better, in my opinion. Is anybody perfect on Ohio State's offensive line or at any position? I think the answer to that is always no. The issues are always there. But Carson Hensman, I think, is going to win the Remington. And if you're trying to, the other factor then, if you're moving Carson Hensman to guard because of everything we've talked about with Tegra Shibola to get Josh Padilla at center, Julian Sain is still a first-year starting quarterback. So you'd be dealing with a lot of inexperience at both of those positions with the battery. So I don't think that that is a possibility. And also Josh Padilla, it doesn't look like he's going to be healthy enough to play on Saturday night. So it's a little bit of a non-starter, and I think it has been a non-starter dating back to training camp.
Yeah, and that's not because it's not a potentially good idea. It's just Carson Hensman is so much better than your other option at center right now, whether or not Josh Padilla was healthy or not. Carson Hensman is an All-Big Ten, All-American level center. He won a national championship for Ohio State in relief duty a year ago. Has done all the right things. He's your Iron Buckeye. I don't think he's, I mean, knock on wood here on my office desk, my studio desk. He hasn't committed a penalty this year. He hasn't been beaten that I can recall one time this year. So Carson Hensman, I think the bigger question for him is if whether or not he can get on Dr. Pepper's Fanville, because that's what he wants.
It's a great goal to have.
And, you know, if you're a social media user, you see every week, I hope on Saturday when the Buckeyes finish up their latest victory, Carson Hinsman and Luke Montgomery posting pictures trying to get Dr. Pepper's attention. I heard Dr. Pepper sent a gift basket.
Okay.
And I heard that the response to said gift basket was, "This is awesome. Can I get on Fanville?" So I think whether it's the Remington or maybe another national championship, I hope Dr. Pepper is listening and gives Carson Hinsman a chance to be on Fansville, because he wants it pretty bad. He wants to drive his truck on there. He wants to be seen. And he's been seen in the middle of the Ohio State offensive line. There's no reason to move him at this point. It's not like last year, where all the conversation for 3+ years around Donovan Jackson was maybe he could play tackle, maybe he could play tackle. And then you're forced to put him at tackle and he excels and he comes into a first round pick. Like, this is not the same situation. This is a guy that's excelling at center and is not, it's not a position where I think you can experiment at this point in the season if you're Ohio State one way or the other.
No, probably not, but definitely appreciate that question.
We have seen Jake Cook taking backup reps at center, learning the position a little bit as the Josh Padilla to right guard thing has happened. So that
I think that's a more pressing situation, because if Josh Padilla is out on Saturday night, you're going to have a backup center. And that is not him right now. So that's, I think, a more pressing concern.
Agreed.
All right. But thanks for the question. If you want to send one of those in next week or anytime, that is the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. We sincerely appreciate those messages. And with all of that said, it is now finally time to get in some bold predictions.
Here we go. Where do you want to start?
You're first. Oh, yeah, you're first. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
I'm first. I go first. Here's the thing about UCLA. I don't think they're very good. But also, there's so many different ways that they've been losing games this year. Indiana, and that's, of course, the game I'm going to go back to a number of times as we talk about what to expect from Ohio State. UCLA had to go to Bloomington. They got beat 56-6. But Indiana did it on the ground with 262 rushing yards in that game, including, 5.6 yards of carry. Heisman front runner, all everything, Fernando Mendoza had 168 yards passing in that game for 3 touchdowns in an interception. I believe whether or not Carnell Tate is healthy and available, which we don't know at this point, I believe that Jeremiah Smith, the audition for more and more of him and more opportunities for him to catch the ball, regardless of whether or not he's being double teamed. As Julian Sain gets more confident, he gets into these heat check moments. Like, you just throw it up to Jeremiah. UCLA's receiver or defensive backs are not going to be able to run with him very long. And Jeremiah, I think what's interesting this year is the Buckeyes have been so content using him in the hitch game and little stuff and getting those 9-10 yard catches. It seems like every week he's breaking a new personal record for catches. I think this week is a big one for Jeremiah. I think against Indiana, Fernando Mendoza completed 15 passes for Indiana against UCLA. I think Jeremiah Smith is going to have 15 catches this week for 200+ yards and 3 touchdowns.
So five more catches than he's ever had in a game in his career.
Yeah, I just feel like it's prime time. Ohio State's in prime time. They've been waiting for this opportunity. People are going to watch because the ESPN ABC thing, there's not a lot of other options for people around the country who maybe even aren't Ohio State or UCLA fans, and the opportunity to watch Jeremiah and Julian in primetime for people that haven't seen him. I just think this is a weekend is, again, as long as weather holds up, that I think you almost force feed Jeremiah a little bit. And I think he's going to break his new, set a new personal best for 15 catches, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. And this is the weekend Jeremiah Smith wins the Heisman.
Oh my. Okay. I mean, because all those stats will also go for Julian Sain, who is the actual betting favorite to win the Heisman right now.
Yeah, but one of them is going to be like a little 8-yard hitch that turns into a 70-yard touchdown run for Jeremiah. It's going to be Jeremiah moments on Saturday. And I think that you've seen him be patient this year. You've seen him really kind of work to get open. You see now the deep shots starting to finally connect with him like they were with Carnell earlier in the year, the confidence from Julian to put it down there. And this is a game where you can take some shots against the UCLA defense because, again, they're going to go 3 and out, or they're going to have most of their possessions. So I just think Ohio State can take some shots. Weather permitting, big day for Jeremiah Smith.
I'm not sure that the weather can actually stop Jeremiah Smith anyway.
The Earth's yellow sun powers him, so we don't know anything else.
That's a great point. So it's tough to really follow up a bold prediction where you're saying Jeremiah Smith is good.
Yep, I know. I really went out on a limb, and I apologize for putting everyone in that position where they had to feel so uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable because I don't like two quarterback systems. I don't like red zone packages with quarterbacks, but I'm just going to have to come to grips with the fact that Ryan Day really liked what he saw from Lincoln Kienholz last week, and it scored and it works. Who am I to argue with that? But there's another element of why I think it will be used again on Saturday against UCLA, which is to put on film that Lincoln Kienholz can throw if you put him in those situations. So
Slant King?
Slant King, jump pass, anything, play action throw out to a tight end. I'm not really sure. I'm not going to drill down on it because I haven't seen that particular page in the playbook. But I do believe that after what Ohio State used last week, which is Lincoln Kienholz following C.J. Donaldson into the end zone on a power rush scheme, this week maybe it will be a play action again, but then rolling out and flipping one out. I guess I should drill down, and he'll throw to Bennett Christian for a touchdown. How about that? Lincoln Kienholz is going to throw for a touchdown in the red zone. It will be in that wild Lincoln package, and it will be done primarily to give more for Michigan, Indiana, or anyone in the playoffs, something else to prepare for. Whether that actually gets used again at that point is up for debate, but it'll be something that they have to account for.
I don't hate it. Obviously, I think that there's a desire. Lincoln, again, is just another one of those guys that's done all the right things. He's acted the right way. He's humbled himself, and he's the backup quarterback, and you want to give that guy a chance to show what he can do. I mean, again, Ohio State knows the odds of Lincoln Kienholz being on this roster next year are pretty low at this point, you'd have to think. And I think that there is a respect that he's earned that says, hey, let's put him out there. I envision a scenario if the game goes the way I think in that 45-10 range, where I think Lincoln can play a lot of snaps in this second half, late third quarter into the fourth. And so I think there's going to be opportunities for him to do things outside of that, the Lincoln Kienholz, the wild Lincoln, or whatever we want to call it. Hot Rod Lincoln. Let's call it a Hot Rod Lincoln. You got a Hot Rod Lincoln, and then you've got Lambo. And now we're just trying to find all of the different vehicles we can put into the Ohio State backfield garage. So I like Lincoln in this game to do some stuff, but I'm going to tell you what. The touchdown pass he's going to throw is not to Bennett Christian. Oh. It's to young Nathan Roberts, because we've never had a Nate game in November at Ohio State this late in the season. And it's a Nate game.
A Nate game is what you're calling it?
It's a primetime Nate game at Ohio State.
We're really butchering it this week, because I called it Nico at night earlier this week.
It's fine. It's whatever you want to call it. I here's the deal. It's pretty clear that Keaton and Bailey and the Buckeyes were trying to get Nate Roberts a touchdown at Purdue. It is pretty clear. It almost, ironically, seemed like they were more interested in getting him into the end zone than they were Max Clair, despite the fact that Max had a lot of people counting on him. But they did throw it to Max one time, and it should have been a touchdown. That was like maybe the worst throw of the day for Julian, including the interception he threw.
It was the most painful to me.
Yeah, it was wide open. Here's the deal. Here's the deal, folks. Straight up. This is not going to be a fullback rushing touchdown for Nate Roberts. This is a play-action pass in the red zone to Nate Roberts catching his first touchdown, and this is why. We've talked about it before. When there are recruits in the building that Ohio State is trying to put the finishing touches on, they do things in a different way. And no team in the country has five different tight ends with a touchdown this year. Ohio State is one of three teams, as we talked about earlier this week, that has four tight end touchdowns this year, four tight ends who've scored a touchdown. This is the weekend where a true freshman tight end becomes the fifth touchdown scoring guy at the position, while Brock Williams, the number one target at tight end in the class of 2027, is in town for Ohio State. He's going to commit in the next like 3 weeks to Ohio State or Georgia or Texas. This is when the Buckeyes are going to say, you are going to get to play here no matter what as a freshman, as long as you can do the things that Nate can do. We're going to find a way to use you. I think Keenan Bailey is going to make that a priority this week. I think Brian Hartline will do his best to make sure that occurs as well. And whether it's the little play action leak that they tried to get him the ball out at the 10-yard line that he fell on Saturday, or whether it's the more expected thing that we've seen with Bennett Christian in the red zone against Wisconsin or whoever that was against. All these games are running together.
Penn State,
Illinois, who cares? It's all the same. This is a Nate Roberts weekend for Ohio State. He's going to score twice, actually. That's what I'm going to say. He's going to score twice. One of them is going to be a running play. This is an evolving bold beat. He's going to get in the end zone. He's going to do different things. Give me Nate Roberts in the end zone. You know I can't just like settle with taking an easy win. So I have to parlay it with something insane.
Well, it's not even an easy win, which is my point to you all the time. He has not scored a touchdown in college. He's been given a lot of opportunities to do so. And we've talked about him more than any fifth string tight end in the history of the Ohio State football program over the last week or 2 weeks, given the red zone concerns. But I mean, by all means, double down with your same game parlay.
Do it. It's Nate. Primetime night game in Ohio Stadium, baby. Woo!
All right. The other dominant topic of conversation for Ohio State, of course, continues to be at right guard. I don't want to belabor it too much, but I wanted to make it a point that as we sit here right now, don't expect Josh Padilla to play. I mentioned that earlier with the question about Carson Hinsman at center. That means that if this rotation is real, and Ryan Day said it publicly on Tuesday, he expects it to continue. And whether that is because competition is still open for the starting job, or if it's just a benefit to Tegra Shibola to come to the sideline for a couple drives, or some combination of both, fine. That's what we're going to see. But I think Ethan Onyanwa is still on this upswing. There's been a notion that this was a huge miss for Ohio State in the transfer portal. And certainly if you're going to pay as much as I believe that they did to land him and keep him out of the NFL draft where he was considering going after his last season at Rice, we thought he was going to be starting at left tackle. He didn't do that. He didn't win the starting job at right tackle. Philip Daniels took that. Then you have competition at right guard, and he wasn't able to supplant Tegra Shibola at any point in the first 9 games on a full-time basis. But I don't think that any of the tools that NFL scouts were enamored by disappeared. I don't think there's a problem with the work ethic for Ethan Onyanwa. We see him as the last offensive lineman off the field pretty much every Wednesday. I thought the reps that he's been getting, even going back to the first month of the season, were pretty encouraging, and they were, again, off the bench against Purdue. So my point is, I think once Ethan Onyanwa gets on the field, which I fully expect him to do, Ohio State's going to score 2 touchdowns with Ethan Onyanwa at right guard. And when the PFF grades, as much as they might be inconsistent or meaningless to some, I think when they're posted, Ethan Onyanwa's grade on Saturday against UCLA will be higher than Tegra Shibola's.
Okay. I mean, I like it. It's the first time we've ever like set a precedent that we're going to go back to PFF grades after a game, but now we've done it.
I don't want to, but I'm trying to find a way to account for it, and I thought it might be too easy. As you said, UCLA's defense stinks. They're 17th in the Big Ten in points allowed. So like they could accidentally score 2 touchdowns with Ethan Onyanwa out there, like, and he could have not contributed to that. So I wanted to account for that in some form or fashion that was not based on the eye test from you or me.
Yeah, I here's the deal. I really don't know that they're going to be able to do a whole lot defensively. Their leading sack guy on UCLA's team has 1.5 sacks in 8 games.
Is that good?
It's not, actually. It's not good. They're a team that's not going to be able to get a lot of pressure on Ohio State unless Ohio State allows them to. I think it's an opportunity for Ethan to make a big step up. And I actually think this is an opportunity for Gabe Van Sickle to improve over what he did a week ago. It was kind of hot and cold for him in his first real playing time at Ohio State. Struggled in the pass protect game, which is what you'd expect from a guy who didn't really have to do a lot of that in high school, but showed a lot in the run game, especially like the polling situations where he can get out and use his athleticism. My expectation is 50% of the snaps for Tegra Shibola and then 25% of the snaps for both Ethan Onyanwa and Gabe Van Sickle, provided that Josh Padilla can't play. So I don't know exactly how much of a fair representation we're going to get of the effort from those two. But I do think it's obviously important that Ohio State continues to keep rotating here. It's not being done just for fun. So hopefully we see Tegra Shibola play an elevated game from what he did a week ago, and that you don't have to see these guys on the field. But this is what's coming for Ohio State as they continue to try to find the best lineup and put the best guys out there, the guys that grade out as champions every week at every position. So it's not been what Tegra's done. So it's been 3 weeks since Caden Curry had a sack, by the way, and that's got to stop. So it
probably will, won't it?
Yeah, and here's the situation with him in Ohio State, and we know, and you wrote about it at Letterman Row on Wednesday, like there's going to be a concerted effort by Ohio State to box in Nico Iamilava, not let him get out of the pocket, not let him extend plays with his legs. And I think you're going to see a guy like Caden Curry capitalize on that. There were a couple moments in the Purdue game where Ryan Brown was back in the pocket for a little bit longer than he would have liked. And then you saw Caden trigger to try to go get him. But Nico is a guy that I think is really comfortable holding onto the ball a long time before trying to get past the line of scrimmage. And I think that lends to a guy like Caden Curry having a big day, just like it did a year ago with Dylan Gabriel in the Rose Bowl for Cody Simon and other guys that were blitzing him. Once you get a quarterback that feels like, hey, I can make things happen, and Nico is not short on confidence in any way, shape, or form. So I think that sets up nicely for guys like Caden to make some plays. And I'm going to give him 2 sacks this weekend and 2 other tackles for loss. Because I think it's time for the Buckeyes defensive ends. Although I do not expect that they will be doing a lot of straight up pass rushing in this game. I think that it's just the patience of Caden Curry, the willingness to wait your turn, the willingness to wait until Nico runs into you is where he's going to excel in this game. And I think Caden's going to have 2 sacks and take him to 9 for the season as he continues to make his push to be this team's sack leader for the season.
I like that. Should be plenty of opportunities, especially because, you know, football is always in Nico's hands and he is a one man band for UCLA. But I was inspired by your selection and your belief that Jeremiah Smith is good at football. And I feel the same way about Caleb Downs. He had 7 tackles in the first round of the college football playoff last year. That was against Tennessee, but also Nico Iamilava. And I think he's going to top that. I think it's going to be a 10-tackle performance for Caleb Downs as he runs around, and maybe that's spy stuff, maybe that's blitz stuff. I think Matt Patricia, the X factor for this particular game, is letting someone with Caleb's skill set be a problem for the quarterback. We've seen it, as we mentioned, with the caging from the defensive line, whether it's Arvell Reese or Sonny Styles, both having different ways that they can be used and deployed to slow down a quarterback. I think there's another way that can be done in Matt Patricia's arsenal, encyclopedic defensive knowledge, and that will be with his sharpest defensive IQ mind, which is Caleb Downs. And I think that's going to lend itself to those 10 tackles, but also an interception. He nearly had one last week, wound up just being an assisted deflection to Jermaine Matthews. Football is going to be in Caleb Downs' hands. And some of that stuff that Justin Zwick mentioned on Monday, and we've referenced a couple times throughout this week, Berm, about the seam stuff, there's been, I don't know, It's difficult for me to think like, well, Caleb Downs was out of position, but at least one of them against Purdue is like, that's weird. I thought that would have been a play that Caleb Downs would have made. So I don't know. And I'd love to sit down and watch some film with Matt Patricia and see how and why that, if this is just a product of the schemes that they're using, you have to have some weakness. Every defense does. How are you going to attack them? But if teams have figured that that's a way that they should go at Ohio State, I'm very confident that Matt Patricia has a solution to that and would spring it on people who think that that's what they should do. And Caleb Downs is the ultimate X factor for that. Maybe even he just told Caleb to let Purdue complete a throw in the seam last week so that they could set up UCLA to try it this week and get him a pick six. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, because
that would actually surprise me.
No, I don't think so. It's 4D chess. And Matt Patricia is an aeronautics engineer. I assume that's what he plays.
I wonder, what's interesting about Caleb is, as good as he is at everything, we've never really seen Ohio State use him as like a blitzer. And I think that's because if you use him as a blitzer, you take him out of the rest of the play and you don't allow him to set up everyone else the way that he does so expertly. So I think there's a chance that we could see him do some things this week. Nico, they're going to put a spy on him, and you can spy with a lot of different guys. So, you know, last week it was Riley Pettijohn and Arvell and other guys. I think you can do that with Caleb, because Caleb to me is like Cody Simon-esque in his intelligence on the field, and the way that Cody basically eliminated Nico from the game last year was just by being in the middle and waiting. Nico is not a guy that is going to be entirely comfortable throwing the ball over the middle of the field. So you can just plop your best player right down in the line of sight and wait. And I think Caleb is in a position to do some big things this weekend, but I want to see him blitz. I want to see him make sacks and force fumbles. I just think he needs those things for people to stop thinking that he's like a game manager on defense, because he's obviously the most important piece in the program for Ohio State. You know, what's funny is I was thinking that Ohio State like load managed Arvell last week, but like he played 32 snaps and the starters on defense only played 37. So,
yeah, I mean, it was just the first drive. And then I think maybe even the first or second snap of the second drive before they put him out there. It's like, all right, that's enough. It's time to put Arvell in the game.
Yeah. But then he was, like I said on Monday, he was on punt coverage for some reason this past week. So like, he's like, I have to get out there and play. I think the best thing about Arvell is that he doesn't want to be the top pick in the NFL draft and he doesn't want people to talk about it, but like, now he's just that guy.
He doesn't want to be the top pick in the
draft. I mean, I don't think he wants to. I think if Arvell Reese had his druthers, he would just finish his career at Ohio State and then immediately be put on an NFL team and have no conversation about it. It doesn't matter. Like, let the NFL just decide, okay, you're going here, and then he'll just go there and play football. And that's what this defense is so fun. You just have guys like him and Caleb and Sonny that are just like, they just want to play football. It's really, it's kind of insane to think that this year's defense is not just better than last year's defense, but more superstar heavy. And like every week, a different guy emerges as a superstar in waiting. And now you've got all three levels, and even on the outside with Davison and Jermaine, like you've got so much talent here that a guy like Caleb Downs can sometimes fly under the radar. It's insane.
It's remarkable. It's crazy. It's bonkers. It's also why Ohio State is 9-0 with the nation's top-ranked defense heading into game number 10 on Saturday night in the Horseshoe. It will start at actually it's going to kick off at 7:36. So plan accordingly for that NBC Nico at night banger.
I have another bold prediction.
Okay.
UCLA, of their 9 games this year, 5 of them have been under 3 hours and 20 minutes long.
Oh, no. Don't
just this, this game's going to be over by 10:30.
Berm, why did you do that?
I just want to put it out there.
Do you like to talk about no hitters while they're in progress too?
Yeah, because I'm not, I don't believe jinxes are real.
You should be a little stitious.
I mean, I'm a lot of stitches, but I don't believe in jinxes. I don't believe that an announcer or me has any impact on the time of a game.
You just learned last week how influential you are with the weather.
And look how the weather turned out at West Lafayette. It was beautiful. It was absolutely gorge. And also, I want to make sure that I respond. Tony McLeod, who sent us an email last weekend, made the trip to West Lafayette at our suggestion with his family. Tony, we hope you enjoyed your first Ohio State road game. And, you know, we want more people to send in photos. Tell us how your experience was at Ohio Stadium this weekend. That's what we want to know at the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. Give us some insight into what made this night game at Ohio Stadium awesome for you. Can you do that, America?
I think. Yo, straight up, America.
Straight up, America. Did you have a good time or not? Spit the truth.
I'm ready to go have a good time in the Horseshoe. We will be there several hours before kickoff and watching warmups and talking about the availability report on the pregame keys. You can get that.
Should be an interesting availability report as I continue to interrupt you like a clown.
You just don't want this episode to end, do you?
I really don't. I don't know, man. It's sometimes it's just nice to talk ball with a friend, you know?
Oh, well, I'm glad that you consider me one after all this time working with me.
You finally made it. You're on the list.
I'm going to cry. Pregame keys with my friend Berm will be a couple hours before kickoff. So 5:30, I think you should be looking for that on 97.1 The Fan, 10TV, 10TV Plus. And then afterwards, into the wee hours of the evening, we will have snap judgments and the notebook, as always, from game number 10, Buckeyes, UCLA. Can't wait to see y'all there. For Berm, I'm Austin. Thanks for joining us on this Freaky Friday edition of The Beat, bold prediction style. We'll see you in the Horseshoe.